podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to another video and podcast from fantasyfootballscout.co.uk. My name is David and today we have the return of the FPL General himself, who's back from a well-deserved holiday, and we are back with another episode of General's Orders. We've got two episodes of this show coming your way during the international break, more of a review-based episode today as we sort of down tools and take a little bit of a breather from those decisions in FPL, but we'll be back to those orders and advice and tips as you make your game week 9 decisions next week. But as I alluded to there, it's been a little while since we've heard from the General, who has been on holiday, and I'm led to believe it was a good one generally, no pun intended, but also a very good one from an FPL perspective as well. How was it sharing some big epic fantasy football moments with your family?
Yeah, good to be back, David. Hope you're well. It was, first of all, I don't really plan my holidays well, do I? I should be away this week during the international break, but I took the week before. Must have been cheap flights or something, which suckered me in. Had a lovely week in Portugal, went away. It was a Friday to Friday trip. So we arrived late on a Friday night of game week 7. First, you know, straight to bed, shattered, up Saturday morning. Wife straight away, let's go to the pool, let's bring the wee man to the pool. And then I just had a quick look on the television. You know, usually when you go on holidays, you see what, you know, what channels you have. Usually you've only got maybe 4 or 5 rubbish channels, Portuguese, you don't even understand them. But I hit the jackpot, had all the sports channels, Sky Sports, BT Sports, couldn't believe my luck. So I said, you know what, why don't you take the wee man to the swimming pool? I'm going to catch Brighton and Aston Villa because I've got a stooping in. And more importantly, I had Ollie Watkins. So honestly, I've been playing FPL for since the early days, 2002, 2003, when FPL started. And watching Villa in Portugal was probably one of my favorite every FPL moments. Ollie Watkins just return after return. There was a couple of times I went to tweet just before the game was over, you know, 17-pointer, 20-pointer, and I kept having to delete the tweet because he kept getting more returns before I could even post it. So great start to the holiday. I knew straight away, first game, this was going to be a big green arrow, and it turned out to be. So yeah, it was a great trip and very good memories to hold on to forever now, watching those Ollie Watkins points in Villamura.
Oh, that's incredible. And in terms of memories, Sonny in the pool, I'm guessing you missed that.
Well, to be fair, she waited till I came down. So I literally bounced down to the swim pool, doing somersaults after the Watkins haul, and just jumped straight into the pool head first.
Oh, incredible.
But yeah, he's 7 months now. That was his first time in a swimming pool. So it was, it was great fun. He loved it. So great holiday. Need another one now because back to Scotland with yellow rain warnings and amber rain warnings. So it's back to reality with a bang.
The weird thing is those weather warnings honestly look like most people's FPL teams right now with all those yellow and orange triangles. So you really have timed it particularly well to come back at such a time when the FPL teams are rife with that as well. You mentioned there the somersaults into the swimming pool. If people haven't seen your knee slide on Twitter, they have to, as possibly your best ever tweet. And also I'm guessing your missus took that. She must be a good sport to join in with that. She could have turned around and be like, no, Mark, I'm not doing something so silly.
Yeah, so the knee slide was for the first Ollie Watkins goal the previous week. Was it against Chelsea, possibly? I held Ollie Watkins from the start of the season, and he hadn't scored, I think, till game week 5 or game week 6. And I said if he scored, I was going to do a knee slide. I said I moved the coffee table so I can do a knee slide. I'm a bit old to be doing knee slides. I'd be a bit worried about doing my ACL if I did a proper knee slide. So it was literally kind of a fake knee slide. And we were, that day in particular as well, we were actually trying to get out of the house to go somewhere. She was kind of rushing me out the door. So he wasn't best pleased when I said, can you just take a picture of me? I'm just going to go on the floor. Can you just take a picture? And she's just like, what on earth are you doing? But she's used to that by now. So she was a good sport. She took the picture and it went down well on Twitter. And I used it again then in Portugal. So I think what I'm going to do, as long as I own Ollie Watkins, every time he scores, the image is going to be used on Twitter. I think that's just going to be the Ollie Watkins celebration from now on.
Oh, it has to be. Yeah. And it's always good to get yourself a nice iconic celebration or tweet or picture or something that you can associate with a certain player and with yourself as well, because it just sort of, and to be, it's probably enjoyable for other Watkins owners as well. So yeah, fingers crossed that becomes a proper thing. And just, I mean, the thing is, I have to say, as I said, just big props to the missus. At some point we should definitely start a series of, like, you know, the Real Housewives of FPL. You know, what is it like being around these man childs who just want to have their picture
taken? I think that would quickly become the most popular FPL show, because I think they would just show us up to what a nightmare we are, especially on Saturdays and Sundays when the games are on. So, you know, what are these idiots doing? You know, why do they spend so much time on this stupid fake game? But yeah, there's certainly a gap in the market for a show like that.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to store that away. When Fantasy Football Scout needs a new show, I'm going to come calling. I'll message you, but really, I'm after the real talent. So yeah, fingers crossed on that one. Fingers crossed on that one. Now, of course, we've talked a little bit about your last couple of weeks. Let's talk about how you got in game week 8 now. 49 points. You took a minus 4, which is actually not like you in many ways. Talk us through kind of what your decisions were for that one. And of course, I think, yeah, you know, you would have been dealing with a number of flags, is my guess. So I wondered if that was perhaps an influence on your decisions.
Yeah, so from the high of Ollie Watkins in Game Week 7, Game Week 8 wasn't as good. Small red arrow, I think, from around 250k to 327k, but overall very happy to be there, you know, in Game Week 8 going into Game Week 9. Always have that kind of mini target of top 100k by Christmas. So hoping to get there without any issues. It was the first minus 4 of the season. I had 2 free transfers, and I ended up making 3 moves. So Estupinan was injured. Saka was a major doubt. And Rashford was just a disaster most weeks. So I took the opportunity to do a bit of a team restructure, because I'm not planning to play my wild card in 9 or 10. So it was kind of setting up a bit more for the long term. So Matty Cash came in, Jared Bowen came in, and Heung-min Son. Those 3 came in for the minus 4. Cash and Bowen blanked. I mean, they all blanked, actually. But, you know, the Son one was a bit of an insurance policy, because I knew a lot of people were going to captain him. I stuck with the auto captain Haaland strategy, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, because I'm not sure if that will continue long term, given how he's performing and Manchester City are performing and the other options that we have. So yeah, it was really kind of a minus 4, a long term minus 4, so that I don't have to wildcard in 9 or 10. Villa have good fixtures on the horizon, and West Ham also do. I knew short term, maybe the first game week or two, that Cash and Bowen might not do a lot for me, but I'm hoping that I'll be rewarded in the future with those guys, because I've brought them in for, you know, 5, 6, 7 weeks and hopefully longer. It's not just jump on and jump off again. So it was 49 minus 4 for a 45. Johnston came in again in goal with a 9-pointer. Trippier with the 6, a very impressive 2 bonus points despite conceding 2 goals. That's why we pay the extra for Mr. Trippier. Gabriel's been great for me recently after a disastrous, was it first 3 game weeks? He didn't even play.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And, you know, blocked a few auto subs and all that kind of stuff. But he's redeeming himself. I think he might have 3 clean sheets for me in the last 4 or 5 weeks, and looks just a good pick long term now that he's back in the team. Elsewhere, Madison was 6. Bruno blanked, but I will keep Bruno for Sheffield United. And I sold Saka for, you know, to bring in Son and Bowen. My kind of plan is keep Bruno for Sheffield United, and then Bruno to Saka in game week 10 is a bit of a no-brainer, because Bruno plays Man City and Arsenal plays Sheffield United that week. So basically target Sheffield United for the next 2 weeks with that spot on the team. Captain Haaland blanked, Alvarez blanked, and Ollie Watkins chipped in with, feels like, his 37th assist of the season. So feels like after the minus 4, the team is looking pretty healthy. The bench is not great. Turner, Nakamba, Bayer, and Gusto. So maybe a bit of work required there. But like I said, no plans to wildcard. Definitely not wildcard in the game week 9. I'll keep an open mind about game week 10, but it's looking most likely that it will be a later wildcard for me this season.
Yeah, and the handy thing is the players you've brought in on that mini wildcard are very in line with players who would probably be in a normal wildcard, Bowen especially, because the West Ham fixtures have very much turned now. I've just put your bus team on the screen, which from what I can see, the only change, because Bayer, Gusto and Nakamba are still on the bench, is Johnston dropping to the substitutes because he's away at Newcastle, Turner coming in at home against Luton. Seems like a fairly easy decision that, but I'm guessing that you are pretty happy with what this team looks like going into the next game week. Quite a lot of your players playing at home. There's a lot of that going around at the moment.
Yeah, game week 9 fixtures are very, very nice for most managers, I think. And even if it's an away fixture, you know, Bruno's got Sheffield United, which is really good. So hopefully there's no issues during the break. I mean, there always is 1 or 2, but hopefully I can dodge the major problems. And ideally, my style of play, bank a transfer. Looking at it on paper, Gabriel away to Chelsea doesn't look fantastic, but I think Arsenal have been good defensively recently. Yes, Chelsea just scored 4 against Burnley, but Chelsea have struggled to score goals this season. So it's either probably bank a transfer or I sell a Gusto to make my bench a little bit stronger. And whichever defender comes in for Gusto probably starts ahead of Gabriel with a better fixture and then just becomes a bench option after that again. So probably ideally banking a transfer just to make it a wee bit easier. I think I've got 0.8 in the bank. So Bruno to Saka is very doable in Game Week 10. But I think that, you know, I always like to bank that transfer if I can. Yeah, going to start Turner. But just because it's Luton at home and Johnson has Newcastle away, I kind of want Johnson to become my set-and-forget goalkeeper. But when the fixtures are like this, I think I've got to play Turner against Luton. But after that, Johnson's just been, you know, fantastic this season. And I've missed a few of his hauls as well against the bigger teams. I think it was Manchester United. He got the clean sheet as well. So I've always been someone who just sets and forgets a 4.5. And it's burned me once or twice this season playing Turner. So I will play him this week, but then afterwards, I'm kind of actually hoping, even though I own him, I'm kind of hoping Turner loses his place so I don't have the decision to make every week then just play Johnston as my set and forget. So I think Johnston's, even when Henderson is fit again, I think Johnston's just playing too well to be dropped, and Henderson's just going to have to be patient and fight for that spot. So yeah, team feels like it's in good shape. I mean, we could be talking in next week's video after a few international games and it could be burning down, but hopefully not.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I was just looking at Crystal Palace's fixtures. You will hopefully be able to set and forget Johnston as long as he stays as a number one. Probably from game week 11, Burnley away, Everton at home, Luton away, even West Ham away. I mean, he's probably going to make a lot of saves in that game. And although that said, Forest are hosting Everton, so maybe you can do Turner then. And then Bournemouth at home for Palace in game week 15. So that's four fixtures from a run of five games where most weeks you'd be starting Johnston. And then the Turner one seems self-explanatory, like this week does. So hopefully you'll be okay with that one. Crystal Palace definitely have been helping people out this season, not least in my team. And you would have missed this last week in terms of on this video. I definitely bragged about it a lot. I got 15 points, I think it was, off the bench for Joachim Anderson last time because Botman didn't play, which is like so jammy. It was so jammy. My team is so jammy all the time this season. I've had loads of weeks of jam. And so if you're not, that's not your favourite toast topping, then I do apologise. And it's only because of all the flags. I can't actually remember what my... I think I ended up rolling the transfer, and that is what ended up me getting Anderson coming in. I think I was toying with selling Chilwell that week and replacing him with Dan Burn, and had I done that, fairly confident Anderson stays on my bench. So the crazy thing is, and this is reassuring for people still, how concertina we all are in terms of the overall ranking, when the game week was still in play and therefore the subs hadn't happened yet, I went down to 900k. And the second that the auto subs came in, I went up to about 448k, I think it was. So I went up 500k places just because Anderson, with the 15-pointer, came off my bench. Now, it made total sense to bench him because it was the United game. He was the guy that scored the goal. Clean sheet, bonus, etc. So I have been very jammy. And I'm really sorry to do this again, Mark, but I had Mickey van der Ven this week.
I've seen that on Twitter.
He was the guy I signed. And the thing is, I feel so bad because I had a load of people think that there was people on Twitter like, wow, how did you call that? You must be such a genius. And I was like, no, I just couldn't afford Porro or Adogi. And I thought I was going into this game really kind of like shorthanded because I mean, the red card obviously changed things. If that red card doesn't happen, then I think that Spurs probably would have won this game by more. I went for Son captain, which we'll get into in a second. You know, I kind of expected those fullbacks to really rack up a big, big haul. Probably, you know, double figure points each. And yeah, that's not what happened. And the thing is, Mickey van der Ven hasn't even... It's not one of those ones where the underlying stats have been good. This is what I mean. I didn't spot anything that was worthwhile. I looked at his stats and it was like one shot all season. Something crazy. And so the chances of this happening, him being the only guy to score in this game, and he's the guy I signed on Saturday morning, I feel really bad. All I can do is apologise. And yeah, the rest of the team it also did well, to be fair. I don't think it was full jam. But yeah, 64 points, Turner 6 points, Anderson 6 points. I have never cheered a 0-0 more because I just felt that both of those teams were heading for a 0-0. Palace without Eze and Elise, Forest without a 1-year, that was just heading for 0-0. Cash, 2 points. Madison, 6 points. Mbeumo, 2 points. Diaby, 2 points. Salah, 15 points. He was my vice captain, so that was a bit annoying. Just the 3 for Son, I captained him. And my transfer was to do Saka to Son. And then, yeah, it was Chilwell to Van de Ven. And then Alvarez and Haaland up front. The thing is that I mean, some people might find this useful because a lot of people have looked at their teams recently, seen the number of flags and gone, oh no, like I'm in just absolute perils. I need to use my wild card. I had, I think, let's work all these flags out. I think I had four. I had Saka, I had Chilwell, I had Estupiñán and Botman. And rather than then necessarily use that as an excuse to use a wildcard when I didn't really want to, I just sort of took a risk and benched Estupiñán and Botman, got rid of Chilwell and Saka because they were the ones that had the money more wrapped up in them and could get me to what I needed, which was Spurs defence. And I needed Son, I felt, because having the three captain candidates is like what FPL used to be like. If you had the three of them, even if you captained the wrong one, you know, you limited the damage that you did to your rank. And it is a bit annoying to be this close to have maybe gotten 30 points out of Salah, but I think with the Van de Ven thing, I'm probably barred from complaining about this game week, to be honest. But yeah, I basically just went in with, 13 players. So I only had two subs I knew would play. Flecken, I think, in the end, missed the game for illness. So Archer was the only one who got any points off my bench. But it just shows that you don't necessarily have to throw a wild card at a massive injury crisis as long as you've saved some transfers, because I did have two free. That's how I was able to do those changes. So it feels good to hold on to the wild card through a period where a lot of people have kind of caved because of all those injuries. I don't know
if you've had that. Yeah, it does. Yeah, I feel good about still having it as well, and I think both our teams are in pretty good shape, and no urgent, you know, medical surgery required with a wild card. So I'm hopeful that the patient approach will play into our favor. Like we don't know what's around the corner. We're getting into the winter months. Every season for the last 5 years, we've had major disruption to the FPL schedule. Now I don't want major disruption to the FPL schedule, but anything can happen. Things that we're not even thinking about could happen. And even just a bit of disruption to fixtures, if you have a wild card, it can be quite useful. And obviously we do need to navigate, you know, Man City and Brentford's blank game week and things like that as well. So I am very much looking to keep it for as long as possible around game week 19, game week 20 even. So yeah, it does feel good to have it. And I think we've both managed our squads quite well and quite sensibly. And we've been, you know, focusing on weakest links, you know, your transfers there, for example, getting rid of Chilwell and Saka and stuff like that worked out. So yeah, we're in good shape. And hopefully the wild card, whenever we do use it, gives us a bigger boost than it gives people around now. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Yeah. Just going back to your captaincy as well, it must have been quite a tricky one when you had Son, Salah, and Haaland. So interested to hear your thought process and how close were you to going Salah?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I was never close to going Salah. If I'm honest, not because I thought it was a bad option. I was pretty set on it being Son. And the reason why was I felt that whilst Brighton's numbers had been really bad defensively, what was interesting was going into the Aston Villa game, then their defensive numbers had been shocking. They were in like the bottom six for like big chances conceded, XGC, all that kind of stuff. And the weirdest thing is that after that game, despite conceding six goals, when you tracked it as last four matches, because that's kind of how I track all my tables, you know, you follow those four matches and then that they all of a sudden ended up in the top half for that. And I was like, what? Does this mean that they've conceded a lot of the chances they conceded against Villa were not necessarily big chances? I wasn't completely sure. But either way, Luton had remained in sort of the more the doldrums of those kind of tables. They weren't too near the bottom. But when you consider that their fixtures have been super, you know, favourable of late, Everton, Wolves, Burnley, and I think Fulham, I think it was. You know, they were basically the division's worst teams for XG creation, and yet Luton was still like in the bottom six or seven over the previous four for that stat. So I felt that Spurs, if given the opportunity to really go for that game, that could have been a 4-5-0 potentially. I didn't see Liverpool smashing Brighton. I saw it potentially being a high-scoring game, but I felt Brighton would give as good as they got, and sometimes that can just change the pattern of the game. You know, there would be times when Liverpool would have to sort of try to contain what Brighton can do going forward, and then obviously in the end it's finished a draw. And so I feel relatively assured in the fact that I made the right decision, in inverted commas, because while Salah can score against anyone, he hasn't really been doing that as often as we're used to in the last, let's say, 12 months. The game was a draw, and it was a much closer run thing when compared with the Spurs game before the sending off, it was just all Spurs. And so, I mean, the sending off changed the game. I think if it wasn't for that, I think Son gets something, maybe even a brace or something, because away from home, Spurs are more geared towards doing well as well. So that's the other thing as well, is that the way that Spurs play, if that game had been at the Spurs stadium, I might have had a harder time making a decision, because we saw with Sheffield United, they're capable of losing 8-0 at home to Newcastle, but they came within a whisker of beating Spurs at Spurs because they just stuck everyone behind the ball. And it took them a long time to break that down. I don't see Son as the type of player who operates best when his team is trying to break down a low block. Because what we saw in that Sheffield United game was that he was having to drop deep to pick the ball up, and that was obviously limiting his ability to score in a box. You've moved that to away from home, and we've seen that much less often this season. Some of his best hauls have been on the road. So, yeah. And I didn't even consider Haaland for 1 second, if I'm honest. I considered Salah more, but only for maybe 2 seconds. And it was always really Son. I looked at the polls as well. He was miles ahead in that. I'd wanted him for a while anyway. I felt a little bit naked without him. And I knew that having all three, even if it didn't go as well as I hoped, I'd probably still get a green arrow, because Salah's not widely owned enough to do damage to me yet. Haaland, his effective ownership at my rank, I was having a look at livefpl.net on Saturday, Sunday. Haaland's EO that weekend was about 137%. So if he got something, it probably would have nudged me down a bit, but not much. But thankfully, he didn't get anything. With Salah, it was something like his EO around me was something like 37%. So actually, I was able to celebrate the 15-pointer because he's still not in that many teams around my rank bracket. So yeah, they were the thoughts that went in to all of that. And I didn't really hesitate at all, really, putting it on Son. I realise now, of course, I backed the early kickoff, and that's why it didn't work. But I'm liking this. I'm liking that in the next couple of weeks we might have a bit of a return to the ways of old, where there's maybe two or three captaincy options every week. You need to probably own all three so that you can just about manoeuvre things properly and leverage the captaincy towards whether or not you get a green or red. Whereas for the last 12 months, it's all about what you do around the captaincy that matters. So there's definitely some opportunities, I think, in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, for me last week, so I didn't have Salah, so it was a shootout for me between Son and Haaland. And you'll remember the document I put together at the start of the season. One of the bullet points was auto-captain Haaland until there's rotation or injury. So I just kind of stuck to that for game week 9. I know it was against Arsenal. And it was really, really difficult not to captain Son, because I was seeing it in the polls, I was seeing it on Twitter, I was seeing it everywhere. Everyone I listened to or you know, anything I read, most people were going for him and Son. And I was definitely in the minority last week, captaining Haaland. But I kind of like that, because we know how good he is. And it's almost, you know, almost never you go into a game week where you get a captain Haaland at much lower effective ownership than what he usually is, because Salah and Son had the good fixture. So I think, what you know, on that document, I have auto captain Haaland until there's rotation or injury. But one of my other bullet points is always be flexible and be adaptable. And, you know, strategies can always change. So I'm not as set on auto captain Haaland now every single week after what we've seen in the recent weeks with Manchester City and with Haaland. You know, there's been a couple of games where he's had zero shots. He certainly had zero shots against Arsenal. I think it was 0.00 XG. That's not what you want to see. I do think Rodri being back will be a big help. I think he's been a colossal loss to them over the last couple of games with that suspension. So it's very interesting for the next few weeks, because Haaland, Salah, Son and Saka, they all have some very tasty fixtures coming up. So I think captaincy is going to be very, very important. And I think it's going to be the key differentiator between, you know, big green arrows and big red arrows over the next few weeks. If you can get that right, then you can fall on the right side of the variance. So I want to, this international break, I just want to keep reminding myself that I don't have to captain Haaland every week, even though that was my plan at the start of the season. Because if there is a week where, like the last one, if Son's playing against a Luton team who are pretty dreadful, and if Salah's playing against a very open Brighton team, I think I need to give it more thought. And I think I got away with it last week because I didn't have Salah, but I got away with it with Son blanking. And I think it's not very often Heung-min Son will blank in that Tottenham team playing up front against a Luton team. So I probably have Yves Bissouma to thank for my overall rank not getting damaged too much last week. Salah didn't do a huge amount of damage, even though I don't have him. You know, it was maybe 70, 80K red arrow. because the likes of Watkins and Trippier, you know, kept chipping in. And people who have Salah, a lot of people who have Salah probably don't have both Trippier and Watkins. They might have one. Some of them might not even have any, those who wild card. So I do need those guys to keep chipping away if I'm going to go without Salah. So I'm going to throw another question back to you now. You had your difficult decision last week because you have all three of them. Mm. Look at the fixtures coming up this week. Son, Salah and Haaland all have very nice home fixtures again. So what are your very early thoughts on your armband this week?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it there with Rodri. That, to be honest, is the decider. I think Rodri being back and the fact that City have lost two in a row, it's like the most dangerous enemy in any walk of life, whether or not that's football or, you know, any sort of other scenario, is a wounded animal, especially one that you know has claws, right? And so him coming back, I think, is at the moment going to push me towards Haaland. I've got my bus team has it on him. I think whilst Everton at home and Fulham at home do look nice for Salah and Son, I'll go back to what I said there about Spurs at home. I think Fulham will throw everyone behind the ball at Spurs. They've got arguably the second best or best goalkeeper so far this season. Areola and Leno have really been the standout shot stoppers of the campaign so far. So bearing in mind that, you know, you're going to have Leno there, I can envisage a world where Spurs are a little bit frustrated by all the bodies in the way. Tim Ream, as my dad well knows, having owned him all season, is having a good campaign for them as well. They can ride the storm a little bit. I mean, they had it with Everton. I think it was game week one. I think Everton created an XG of like 3.8 or something ludicrous, and then Fulham won the game 1-0. If Sheffield United can go to Spurs and frustrate their style of play by reducing the amount of space that they offer behind them, I think Fulham could do the same thing. And then with arguably a better goalkeeper as well, I think that's going to impact his potential. I still want to own him because I can foresee a world where they still win and he gets some returns. But, you know, you have to, it's fine margins in those captaincy decisions. And yeah, Brighton can't offer a goalkeeper in the same way. As you mentioned earlier, Brighton do play an open style of football. And so even though the underlying numbers may have been a bit misleading or a bit confusing in the last couple of weeks, I do think that they're going to give up chances for City. And City are going to be ruthless with them because Rodri's back. Guardiola's not happy with the fact they've lost two in a row. I would be very scared being Brighton going into this one. And then just going back to Liverpool, Everton are mildly resurgent at the moment, at both ends of the pitch, really. They were offering a lot of big chances up earlier in the campaign. They were sort of in the bottom four or five. They're now kind of mid-table for the whole season. I'm just double-checking what they've been like in the last four matches. But the thing about Liverpool-Everton derbies is that sometimes the form book just goes out the window and you end up with some really crazy games. Everton can be on a good run and lose 6-1. Or it looks like Liverpool should steamroller them because they're in good form and Everton aren't. And then it's a 0-0. I can just think of so many times that's happened in the past. And so, you know, it's maybe settled with an unfortunate Pickford own goal, which I know would upset some people. But there's just too many what ifs. And I've seen scenarios before where Liverpool hosting Everton has resulted in a dull game. Games where Spurs at home, you know, they haven't been able to get past these teams that are, you know, thrown in a low block, for example. Whereas I don't have any of that concern. I just basically have fewer caveats at the back of my mind with Haaland. So it's on him at the moment.
Yeah, likewise. It feels like an easy one for me. Again, I don't have Salah, so I have one less captaincy option to consider. So again, Son against Fulham. And I was going to mention Leno if you didn't. I just rate him very highly. I think he's been very, very good since he went there. And again, you don't even know which goalkeeper is going to be in net for Brighton, which is good when you've got a striker playing against them. So yeah, for me, the Rodri factor's big, the wounded animal factor. I also like the fact that some people have sold Haaland on wildcards recently. So kind of doubling down on captaincy Haaland to hope that, you know, you get a leg up on those people who went without him. Looking at the captaincy the next few weeks, Haaland captain for me against Brighton, probably captain in game week 11 as well at home to Bournemouth. But game week 10 might be the first time I don't captain him. And obviously it depends how he does against Brighton, because if he smashes Brighton, I probably will just leave the armband on him against Manchester United, which, you know, they're struggling, a lot of defensive issues, underperforming. So I think it's fine to captain Haaland against Manchester United. But I think Saka will be very tempting that week. If Saka plays in game week 9, and he's fit for game week 10 at home to Sheffield United, I'll probably be bringing him in that week, and I'll be tempted to captain him in that fixture. If I'm going to play the fixtures on captaincy in game week 10, it'll probably be Saka over Haaland. But again, cross that bridge when it comes. But yeah, as you can see, I'm moving away from my just captain Haaland and don't give it any thought, because I think I was probably wrong last week just to blindly captain him, and I don't want to do that again.
Yeah, it's an interesting time, and it is weird in a way, because this is what FPL used to be like when we would actually have a captaincy video. I had Joe do one for Scout's YouTube channel last week, and it was felt like something out of the distant past, perhaps something we should put in a museum, like an actual captaincy video. What's going on? But the interesting thing is, and I'm now going to ask you a couple of questions about, which are directly related to my team, but it's all centered around some of these issues, right? If you've got all three of the captaincy candidates, which can be good, can cover you off in some of these situations and protect you, you do have to forego certain things in other areas. So the issue I've got this week is I don't have Trippier at all, and I don't actually know, if I'm honest, how I would get to him. I've still got Estupiñán. I've still got Botman. As things stand, I'm having to start Botman and hope he's fit. So I don't really know what I'm doing with my transfers yet. I'll wait till the international break concludes and I have more of an idea there. You don't have Salah, for example, and there has been a bit of a weird 50-50 of late. They're not in the same position, but just because of what they represent, it's kind of been Trippier versus Salah. So for me, I'm nervous about how to get to Trippier. I don't really know how to do it. I've also got to get Saka back in, which a lot of other people are sort of thinking about as well, which I think we'll talk about in a second. But you don't have Salah, so you're on the other side of the coin to me on this issue. So how naked do you feel without Salah? Do you feel as naked as I feel not having Trippier?
I feel like another piece of clothing comes off every week as a non-Salah owner. I feel like he'll be butt naked soon. It's funny you said there, you know, you're nervous about Trippier and you can't get to him. Exactly the same for me. I'm nervous about Salah. Don't know how I can get to him. So it's a very interesting FPL season. We've got to make decisions. We've got to go without really, really good picks. Trippier and Salah are two of the best picks in the game at the moment, but to have both of them is not straightforward if you've got Haaland and Son as well and a few others. So, again, I don't want to... I've had no Salah all season, and I don't want to just be stubborn and just say, right, I made my decision, I'm going to just go without him. Part of the reason I'm hoping to bank a transfer in game week 9, like you, I want to get Saka back game week 10. But with two free transfers in game week 10, it also opens the door of a wee bit of surgery to get Salah. You know, let's say Salah goes out again and does really well against Everton. I'm not going to have much choice but to, you know, try and get him in game week 10. And even if that means not getting Saka, you know, it might just have to be the case. So I don't like not owning Salah at the moment. He's obviously he's very consistent. It kind of reminds me of Harry Kane last season. He just performs week after week. He gets you something every week, even if he's not your armband every week. So, yeah. I'm a very happy Trippier owner, and obviously he's going nowhere. And, you know, can kind of throw Watkins into the mix as well, because I'm able to afford Trippier and Watkins because I don't have Salah. And as long as Trippier and Watkins continue to deliver, if they can just, in my mind, if they can kind of match Salah together for similar price when you add them together or whatever. So, yeah, it's tricky. And that's why as well, I'm not going to say definitely no wildcard in game week 10, because if it gets to game week 10 and Salah's just performed really well again, if I want Saka, maybe a wildcard game week 10 to get Salah and Saka is justifiable, and then just tidy up around the fringes as well for the long term. So, yeah, keep an open mind on all of this stuff. And, yeah, it's getting to the point where Salah will be giving me sleepless nights soon, I think.
Well, one thing that sort of sprung to my mind when you were talking there was something that Praz said at the start of the season. I can't remember if it was on Deadline Dilemmas or if it was on a video with me when I did a team reveal with him. He basically said that this could be the season where we have to forego certain schools of thought that other people are sort of more on board with and stick to that decision. And then sticking to that decision is arguably going to be a better tactic than necessarily flip-flopping between those two positions, you know, having FOMO one week and breaking your team to get one of them at the expense of the other, because then the next week actually it was a really good one for Trippier, for example, and you'd rather have him. If you can find ways to mathematically match those players that you haven't got with other differentials, then maybe that's going to work. I mean, I've got a little bit lucky in that regard, in that Anderson and Van de Ven have kind of covered off the things I don't have, you know, because Van de Ven's outscored Trippier this week, so I've gone up to 153k, but that's not going to happen every week, so I do need to find a longer term solution there. So yeah, it's just an interesting one, because in the past I think the template kind of moves all together and you sort of feel like we're all in the same boat. But what I find actually a good thing about this season is that you've got a no Salah camp and a Mo Salah camp actually on, even just on this particular video / podcast. One of us has gone with one route, one of us has gone with the other, but neither one of us feels like we're having a bad season. Both of us feel relatively happy with where we are. We don't feel like we need any massive major surgery right now. We've got the same idea for our wild card. So that in and of itself, I hope, helps people feel more comfortable with whichever camp they've chosen in terms of worrying about grass being greener on the other side, because we're kind of, we've gone different ways, but it hasn't, there's not like a huge gap between our two overall ranks.
And the way, kind of the way I'm thinking about it as well, this week's a good example where I had a red arrow because I didn't have Salah, and obviously he did really well for captainers. And you know, you log into social media and you see people posting their screenshots of, you know, Captain Salah 30 points. And straight away, that creates a FOMO. It says, play the wild card, get Salah. What are you doing? You're an idiot. All the usual stuff that goes through an FPL manager's mind over the course of a weekend. But there, you know, you take a step back and you think, right, this was Salah's game week. You know, game week 9 could be Haaland's game week. Game week 10 could be Son's game week. That's the nature of this season. There's going to be swings probably right the way through. It could be the most swingy season we've ever had. You know, there's Salahs and there's no Salahs. Now we're even seeing teams where there's Haalands and there's no Haalands. So, you know, if Haaland bangs in a hat-trick against Brighton and gets 40 points, as we know he's done a few times in the past, you know, how do the wildcarders feel then? And do they knee-jerk back to him, or do they stick to the plan? So it's a very, I'm really enjoying this season and kind of, not just with my team, I'm enjoying the overall landscape, and it's intriguing every week and watching the thought process of other managers and how they're playing. I'm keeping an eye on a couple of mini leagues and, you know, the different strategies that are at play. So really, really good season on the cards, which is what we needed after a very boring, probably the worst ever season last season with everyone with the same teams with double game weeks and stuff like that. So long may it continue. And the more the teams start to diversify, the better it is for the game overall.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And the diversification of people's teams, as I said, isn't seemingly creating a massive disparity in terms of how people are getting on as well, which is nice to see. There are people having bad seasons, there are people having good seasons, but I don't think that's necessarily being dictated by which side they fell, which side of the coin they fell on the major issues, which I like to see. I think that as a group of managers, we're all learning to deal with the idea that we're going to stick to the plan rather than necessarily flip-flop because of FOMO. And that's nice to see. It kind of just means that as a group, we're all kind of maturing and coping with the idea that we don't have a certain player, which I think is just, I think it's good. I feel like, as you say, the landscape of the game is in a really good place. One other thing I just wanted to ask you about, actually, to be honest, just looking at the fixtures, because yeah, there's a bit of a Saka, there's a no Saka kind of thing at the moment, because some people got rid of him for this game. We both got rid of him for the most recent match, and ways to get him back in. I was kind of looking at maybe it could be Son who makes way. That's what I'm thinking, looking at the fixtures. Thought about what you might do, because game week 10, when you've got Arsenal at home to Sheffield United, you've got Spurs away at Crystal Palace. Arsenal do admittedly go away to Newcastle in game week 11, but Spurs then host Chelsea, and they are two of the teams that have actually defended really well this season. What would be your thoughts in letting go of Son for Saka? It's probably someone that I just felt like we didn't mention his name in that Saka back in conversation, so I thought I'd just briefly touch on that, because I'm already looking at that as an opportunity to get him back in.
Yeah, everything is on the table here. I've got the Spurs fixtures in front of me as now as well, and I mean it's similar to selling Saka last week. I thought even if Saka was fit, I don't mind losing him for Man City and Chelsea, and so the same thing goes for Heung-min Son. You know, I don't think he's a must-have keep all season. And when it gets to, you know, game week 10, Spurs play Palace, Chelsea, Wolves, Villa, Man City, West Ham, Newcastle, it's actually quite tricky for quite a while. You know, there's no bankers in there. You know, Wolves are performing well, Palace are defending well. So I think that's definitely an option. you know, people who maybe don't have any Manchester United midfielders like I do, you could sell Son for Saka instead and go with just Madison or even no Tottenham midfielders. You know, there's no right or wrong answer here. But yeah, it's good you brought that up because I hadn't really given that too much thought because I have Bruno and it just feels easy to sell Bruno for Saka when Bruno's got Man City. But Son out obviously frees up a bit more cash as well to make things easier elsewhere. So yeah, good you brought that up. One thing I'm going to mention as well before I forget was I was just thinking when you were talking there about the swingy game weeks and stuff. Something I do quite often, if I'm going into a game week, and I think it's very important this season, I went into the last game week with no Salah. I didn't captain Son and I captained Haaland. And I kind of knew myself there was a very good chance of a red arrow. And I just said that to myself, as soon as the deadline passes, chances are here that there's going to be a red arrow. And I'm not gonna overreact. It's impossible to get a green arrow every week. And some weeks, just going into a game week with low expectations makes it a lot easier to deal with if things don't go your way. Then because you were already prepared for it, and then if things go well, jackpot. You're feeling even better because you had low expectations. And I do that very often. The weeks where I bank a transfer, I have low expectations because I think, right, everyone else or most other people are making a move here. So maybe they're one step ahead this week. So give me a grey arrow or a small red. But then the week after, two frees, maybe three transfers, that's when I can really, you know, boost past them, even if they've got a leg up the week before. So I think it's a good exercise to do. If you feel like your team's not fantastic on paper, just have low expectations because it does make it easier to deal with then when the red arrow comes. I've got a red arrow. I knew it was probably going to be a red arrow and I'm looking at banking a transfer now. You know, there's no panicking going on. I always kind of think of it as well. You know, it's just sometimes it's short-term pain for long-term gain. And again, the waiting for transfers is a good example. You've got a short-term pain of watching players rise and fall. But then also this week's a good example. I got my red arrow, but I brought in Cash and Bowen, knowing that the fixtures of maybe the first two game weeks of one of them were not fantastic. So I knew there could be some short-term pain there, and that certainly was the case in game week 8, but I'm hoping by the time I get to game week 10, you know, even if it means two red arrows game week 8 and game week 9, take the red arrows on the chin. And if it means four green arrows in a row then with Cash and Bowen with better fixtures among other things, then overall you're going to be up on the deal, you know, in 6 or 7 game weeks time. So always try and think of the bigger picture and don't zone in too much on just one game week.
Absolutely, which is a good, now is a good time to think of that because, of course, no decisions ahead of us this week. All those decisions are going to come next week after we've had those international break fixtures. And that is when we will be able to return to our usual cadence of 3 individual orders. We're just waiting for the injury situation to fluctuate because one of those orders could very much be about one of those guys with a flag on it. Well, hopefully you guys have enjoyed this video today. Hopefully you found it useful for us to sort of talk about some things more in review form rather than specific issues. Of course, if you have not had a chance to sign up for Fantasy Football Scout membership yet, now is a good time to do it because you might get a little bit bored without decisions to make in the international break. And so if you want to review the season statistically, then now is a good time to do that. Save up to 30% on those preseason prices. Of course, if you've enjoyed this video, make sure you hit the like button, subscribe to the channel, and hit that bell notification as well. That's everything that I need to pass on to the troops, Mark, unless there's anything you'd like to add before we go.
No, I suppose no orders this week, but maybe a sneaky one. Just switch off. Switch off now. If you're listening to this in the first week of the international break, switch off until next week. Come back fresh and refreshed and ready for battle in game week 9. So yeah, some downtime is always good during a break, and come back ready next week.
Yeah, good advice indeed. Well, with that, we shall leave you fine folks to enjoy the rest of your international break, and we shall see you next time.